views and opinions of findings and or devices discussed in this podcast are those of the host, subject matter experts, and our guests. Facts represented constitute our understanding at the time of the podcast, whereas updated factual information may be developed. They should not be construed as pronouncing an official Department of Defense's position, policy, decision, or endorsement. The hosts and guests of Cubist may be defense contract personnel who support the Traumatic Brain Injury Center of Excellence. Status of all hosts and guests will be identified during introductions to the podcast. Hi, welcome to Clinical Updates in Brain Injury Science Today, or Cubist, a podcast for healthcare providers about current research on traumatic brain injury, also known as TBI. This program is produced by TBI COE, and today I'm your host, Don Marion, a neurosurgeon and contractor in support of TBI COE. I'll be speaking with Dr. Keith Stussy, a family practice sports medicine physician and also a TBI subject matter expert, who again is a contractor in support of TBI COE. Keith and I will discuss a study titled Head Injury Treatment with Healthy and Advanced Dietary Supplements, a pilot randomized controlled trial of the tolerability, safety, and efficacy of branched-chain amino acids in the treatment of concussion in adolescents and young adults. The study was authored by Dr. Daniel Corwin and his colleagues and was published in the Journal of Neurotrauma in April of 2024. Keith, thanks for bringing this article to our attention. So why was this study done?
Hi, Don, and thanks for having me today. So we know that concussion is a significant issue, particularly in the adolescent and young adult population. Over the past decade, there have been advances in how we treat individuals who have sustained a concussion, but these have mainly come in the area of physical activity and rehabilitation, where research has shown that strict rest, which we also have called cocooning, is detrimental to recovery. There have been multiple studies that have shown that early initiation of aerobic exercise is associated with faster return to sport. But in spite of these advances in rehabilitation and recovery, pharmacologic treatment that hastens recovery has yet to be identified. Medications that are commonly prescribed, such as over-the-counter analgesics and antiemetics for nausea and vomiting, focus solely on symptom management without targeting the underlying pathophysiology that leads to concussion symptoms. I'd like to first talk a little bit about branched-chain amino acids, or BCAAs, which are the concussion treatment of interest in this article. So BCAAs are three of the nine essential amino acids that are necessary for human metabolism. They are called essential because they cannot be made by the body and must be supplied in the diet through consumption of meat, dairy, and legumes. BCAAs participate directly and indirectly in a variety of important biochemical functions in the brain, to include production of glutamate, which is considered a primary excitatory neurotransmitter, and plays a major role in memory and learning. Now, interestingly, glutamate can be converted to gamma-aminobutyric acid, or GABA, which is an inhibitory neurotransmitter, and is thought to play a major role in controlling nerve cell hyperactivity associated with anxiety, stress, and fear. BCAAs are sold in powder form by many commercial outlets as dietary supplements that are popular among some athletes and bodybuilders to improve muscle mass and strength. In preclinical models of mild to moderate traumatic brain injury, or TBI, BCAA supplementation has been shown to improve neurocognitive and sleep function. In several studies, BCAA supplementation in severe TBI patients led to moderate improvement in disability and cognitive function. Meanwhile, in veterans who are recovering from mild TBI or concussion, BCAA supplementation improved actigraphy metrics and self-reported sleep quality, but no studies have been performed evaluating the efficacy of BCAAs for improving neurocognitive or clinical symptom recovery in concussed adolescents and young adults. Therefore, the goal of this pilot study was to determine the efficacy, tolerability, and safety of varied doses of oral BCAA supplementation in a group of concussed adolescents and young adults.
Interesting, Keith. It is true that when it comes to treating our service members with concussion, we rely on a progressive return to baseline physical and cognitive activity And most of the pharmacologic intervention involves treatment for secondary symptoms. As you said, post-traumatic headache, insomnia, or pain associated with musculoskeletal injuries. So, Keith, can you describe the methodology the authors used in performing their study?
Well, Don, one of the reasons that we chose this particular study was because it was a double-blind, randomized controlled trial, which is really the best way to evaluate the effectiveness of an intervention. Their recruitment occurred in outpatient clinics, which were mainly sports medicine and primary care, urgent care centers, and emergency departments of a tertiary care children's hospital and an urban tertiary care adult hospital, both with a level 1 trauma designation from June of 2014 through December of 2020. Now, inclusion criteria included ages between 11 and 34. They had to have had a diagnosis of concussion based on the International Consensus Concussion Guidelines. Their injury was within 72 hours prior to their evaluation. They had to have weighed at least 40 kilograms, and this was due to the dosing consideration of the BCAAs, and had a negative pregnancy test and appropriate contraception for postmenarchal females. Now, the exclusion criteria included signs of a moderate or severe TBI, including witness seizure or admission to an intensive care unit, prior concussion within the preceding 90 days, personal or family history of an inborn error in metabolism that would contraindicate BCAA ingestion, active prescription of neurologic or psychoactive medications, and an allergy to red dye number 40, or sucralose, and this is because they use this as an additive to the BCAA supplement. So participants were randomized into one of five study arms, either placebo, 15 grams, 30 grams, 45, or 54 grams of the BCAA treatment daily, and they were followed for 21 days after enrollment. Now, participants were monitored with a daily electronic survey and cognitive testing, as well as continuous actigraphy to look at their sleep. Each survey included questions about concussion symptoms, physical activity, cognitive activity, drug compliance, and adverse events. In-person visits were conducted at 3 points during the study enrollment, between study days 5 and 9, 12 and 16, and 22 and 24, to assess symptom burden and side effects in person. Outcome measures included daily computerized neurocognitive tests, which included processing speed, the a priori primary outcome, and attention, visual learning, and working memory using the COGSPORT Axon Sports Computerized Cognitive Assessment Tool, or the CCAT, symptom score, physical and cognitive activity, sleep-wake alterations, treatment compliance, and adverse events. And Don, I'd just like to point out that the study was paused in 2016 due to low study enrollment. During this time, they modified the eligibility criteria in multiple areas. For instance, the age was lowered from 16 to 11, the time frame from point of injury was extended from 24 to 72 hours, and the mechanism of injury was extended from sports injury only to all injuries. Enrollment was resumed in 2018, but again slowed in 2020 due to the coronavirus outbreak. At that point, the authors concluded the study and analyzed data of 42 patients, which was short of their goal of 50 participants derived from power analysis.
Quick question. If the participants were outpatients and only seen 3 times during that 21-day study period, how are the investigators sure that they were, in fact, consuming their study drug according to assignment? And I ask that, Keith, because, you know, in my early bodybuilding days, I had an occasion to take branched-chain amino acid supplements, and they're awfully bitter, Keith.
Well, that's a good point, Don. And while it is true that the participants were physically seen in person only 3 times during the 21-day study period, they were also receiving daily electronic surveys, which included self-report on the number of bottles of study medication they consumed. And so they were asked, did you consume 0, 1, or 2 bottles, as each daily dose was divided into twice daily increments. So in theory, if they took the full dose, they would have answered 2 on the survey. And for the days that the participants did not answer the survey, it was assumed that no drink was consumed.
Okay, thanks for clarifying that, Keith. So can you tell me how they did their analysis and what were the results that they found?
So the authors originally planned on using a mixed effects model by prescribed dose, but given they were unable to reach their enrollment goal and they had varying response rates, they were unable to use this approach. So instead, they used a linear regression to conduct a dose response analysis. This model included a total cumulative study dose received, which was the study dose prescribed multiplied by the number of days consumed said dose as an independent variable, and then the change in outcome, which was the average of each participant's first three measures compared with the last three measures over the course of the study, as the dependent variable. This dose response model was fitted separately for each of the four CCAT subtests: total symptom score, physical activity, and cognitive activity. And the intercept and slope parameter with 95% confidence interval and p-value were obtained from models with each outcome. Regarding the results, the authors first point out that four participants withdrew prior to providing any follow-up, so they were withdrawn from the study. Therefore, they only analyzed 38 participants in total, and remember, their goal was to have 50 participants. So, for all the participants, the average age was around 16. There were approximately 47% female, nearly 80% were white, and the median number of days from injury to enrollment was 2. Specific mechanisms of injury were not discussed in the paper. In terms of study outcomes, the authors found no overall change in neurocognitive testing with increased total BCAA dose consumed. More specifically, there was no difference between the arms on their primary outcome variable of processing speed. However, there was a significant reduction in total symptom score by about 4 points on a 0 to 54 Likert scale for every 500 grams of study drug consumed. Findings also indicated significant improvement in return to baseline physical activity by total dose consumed, noting an increase of about half a point on a 0 to 5 Likert scale for every 500 grams of study drug consumed. Linear regression analysis demonstrated no change in cognitive scores. Results from actigraphy data were not available due to the limited number of participants. However, the raw values for sleep efficiency and total sleep time showed a trend towards improvement when comparing the highest BCAA dose group and the placebo group. Now, there were no serious adverse effects reported. 8 of the 38 participants reported either a mild, which was defined as not interfering with daily activity, or moderate, which was limitation of daily activity, adverse event, and there were no differences in adverse events across study arms. In fact, it should be pointed out that those taking placebo actually had more adverse events than those who were taking the highest dose of BCAAs. There were actually 5 adverse events in the placebo group and 2 in the highest dose arms. This indicates a high level of tolerability with taking the BCAAs. And the majority, actually 12 of the 13, of the adverse effects were gastrointestinal side effects such as abdominal pain, diarrhea, and bloating.
Yeah, I'm glad you added that because that doesn't sound like they were very serious side effects. So that's good to hear. These results are certainly interesting. And as you stated earlier, it is exciting to hear about a randomized controlled study involving a pharmacologic agent for the treatment of concussion. So what do you consider the limitations of the study?
I alluded to this a little bit earlier, is the low number of participants in the study and the fact that they had to change the methodology partway through the study. I found it quite interesting that after the first 2 years of recruitment at multiple outpatient clinics, and this was done through the University of Pennsylvania and a tertiary care emergency room, they were only able to enroll 12 subjects. They then had to broaden the age limit, lengthen the time from injury to presentation, and open it up to all injuries. Even after broadening the inclusion criteria, they were still unable to meet their power analysis goal of 50 participants. So because of this, the statistical analysis plan had to be altered, and of course, this leads the reader to question the significance of the results. In addition, because recruitment was spread out over a 6-year period of time, there were changes in the way we manage concussions, primarily from a passive to more active therapeutic approach. So that in and of itself may be a factor that could lead to improvement in symptoms and recovery time. And lastly, there is such a broad age range in the group. I mean, their criteria went from 11 years to 34, it makes the results difficult to generalize for a specific age group. As we know, the adolescent and young adult brain is vastly different from the adult brain, and therefore, the effect that BCAAs have on each age group may be different. For future studies, I would certainly like to see them separate between less than age 18 and age 18 and over, as they do in most studies looking at concussion management.
So what would you consider the key takeaways for primary care providers in the military?
Well, you know, despite the limitations I just discussed, I still feel that this study is a step in the right direction that has some interesting results and that could ultimately lead to a larger trial, specifically in the adult population. As far as key takeaways for our military primary care providers, I think it's too early to recommend that they go out and stock up on BCAAs in their aid stations. It is nice to see that this study did show a dose-related response and symptom reduction and return to baseline activity. In addition, the patients in this study appeared to tolerate the BCAAs with very few side effects, even at the highest dose. But given the limitations discussed above, especially the fact that the average age of this cohort was 16 years, I do not feel we can make any absolute recommendations to our providers at this time. You know, after reading this article, I checked the website clinicaltrials.gov to search for any ongoing studies involving BCAAs and concussion, and unfortunately, none came up. However, with this just being published, I'm hoping that someone out there will submit a proposal for a larger study so that we can validate these results.
Yeah, that makes sense, Keith. This is a very exciting look at a potential pharmacologic treatment for our service members who sustain a concussion. So unfortunately, Keith, that's all we have time for today. You can stay up to date on future episodes of Cubist by subscribing on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts, where you can also find links to the articles we discuss on these podcasts and other relevant resources. Cubist is produced and edited by Benny White and was hosted today by me, Don Marion. It is a product of the Traumatic Brain Injury Center of Excellence, a branch of the Research Portfolio Management Division under the Research and Engineering Directorate of the Defense Health Agency, and is led by Branch Chief Captain Scott Cota, Medical Corps, United States Navy. Thank you for listening to this episode.